Okay, ready to go?
Yes.
Okay, so is anyone, there's, we're just recording, okay.
Yeah.
All right, so it's just us, very good. So this is what we've done in past years with this session, I guess, the art of Psak, is I give a basic introduction, and then we basically learn through a siman in Shulchan Aruch. In Hilchos Dayanim, in Choshen Mishpat, Siman Yud, it goes through the halachas of Hadapaskin, and just sort of use that as like a as an outline, as a starting point to be able to discuss all the different inyanim in Psak Halacha. But each group has their own, you know, ha'aros, concerns, questions, comments, you know, so feel free to turn it into a discussion about Psak, because I don't think that whatever we do in the next hour and whatever, the next hour or so, is going to, you know, be a thorough how-to in terms of Psak Halacha anyway. So if we don't get to every si'if in Siman Yud, you know, it's not the end of the world. I don't think it's the end of the world. I assume at some point we'll all get to every si'if in Shulchan Aruch, but it doesn't have to be right now necessarily. So just some introductory remarks about Psak. There's no obvious shortcut in terms of, or I should say more clearly, obviously there is no shortcut in terms of becoming a posek. A person, there's no substitute for just learning a lot, for going through Dalet Chalkei Shulchan Aruch to the extent that we're able to, and for learning through sugyas and having a mind toward halacha when we're learning through sugyas. There are plenty of people who learn a lot, there are plenty of people who are very, very brilliant, but are not poskim, and you wouldn't go to for a psak halacha, because it's just not their focus. It's just not the way that they learn, or sometimes it's just because they have no mesoro, or they have no chush for psak, they have no feel for psak halacha. They're very good in lamdas, or they're very good in other areas of Torah Hashem. But you know, a lot of times people have like crazy chumra sometimes, just because they don't have a chush for psak, and they just assume that, you know, if they saw it somewhere, it means you have to be chushish for everything, because that's just, you know, whether that says something about their personality or whatever. But a person has to have a certain feel for psak, and that feel, it's not something you have to be born with, but it's something that gets developed if you learn in that way, and you see what poskim say, and you see how a tshuva is written, and it helps to have a mesorah to be able to discuss things with gedolei poskim. And the more you talk to gedolei poskim, the more you develop that sense, that that chush for psak. And when we say that you have to learn a lot, it doesn't just mean like learn a lot in a particular miktsava, you know, in a particular area of learning. A person has to get a sense of kala Torah kula, at least, you know, go through Shas a few times, you know, and go through, as much of Shulchan Aruch as you possibly can. And, you know, when you say stuff like that, sometimes it's scary to people, like, oh, so then I'll never be a posek, because I'm never going to have the opportunity to go through, you know, all of that, you know, to go through all of Shas, and to go through all of Dalet Chalkei Shulchan Aruch. So, you know, it's not like, you know, people often think of it as like, is a person a posek or not? Like, it's like a yes or no answer. It's like an on-off switch. You know, is he a posek? Yes, then you can ask him anything. Is he not a posek? No, then you can't ask him anything. That's not exactly, you know, like everything else in life. You know, there's a broad range, and there's a lot of, you know, pieces in between. Like, there are people that can answer what it says in, you know, the basic areas of halacha and the basic shailas that come up every day, because they know maramakamulo. They're just able to show you know, what the halacha says in particular places. But that doesn't necessarily mean that they're ready to paskin on like the world's biggest issues. You know, my wife teaches kalas, so someone, one of her kalas, sent her a question yesterday, and my wife asked me how to respond. I said you should respond, this shaila needs to be dealt with by people on the caliber of Rav Schechter or of Willig in consultation with a psychologist. Meaning, the woman who was asking the shaila thought, yeah, this is like a text to a kala teacher kind of shaila. Like, how many bidikas do I have to do again? I forgot. You know, like that's a text to a kala teacher kind of shaila. This was like a major, major, major shaila. It was not a text to a kala teacher. It wasn't a text kind of shaila. It wasn't a kala teacher kind of shaila. And it certainly was not a text to a kala teacher kind of a shaila. So it needs to be a discussion. So of course, obviously my wife said, you know, would you like to speak to my husband? I'll put you in touch with, the Gedolei HaPoskim that would need to deal with such a shaila. I had a sense in that particular case that when the person heard that they would realize that, meaning it was someone looking for a kula, and they would realize that this is not something that's a simple kula, and they wouldn't pursue it any further. Meaning, like, I didn't think that they really needed the kula as badly as they thought they did, and if they did, then they'll go through the proper channels, to have that kula. But but obviously there are different levels of rabbanim. So a person shouldn't feel dejected if you're not yet, you know, the posek hadar. There are very few people that make it to that level to become the posek hadar. Doesn't mean you're not allowed to be a rabbi at all. Rav Shachter just said recently in a parsha shir, I think, that he once said at a chag asmicha, the halacha in Yerideya, that if you're under 40 years old, you're not allowed to paskin a halacha when there's someone that's over 40 in the city that could paskin halachos. Even if you're smarter than him, even if you know more Torah than the guy that's over 40, but as long as he's qualified, there's halacha in Shulchan Aruch. So he said that, he chose to say that at a chag asmicha. So that's interesting choice of venue. It's like this past Shabbos at the NCSY Shabbos in Yeshiva. It's when he chose to say that no one should ever go on NCSY Shabbos. So that was again an interesting choice of venue. You know, if you ask him shyly, you can get. So anyway, so he said that Rabbi Lam was very, the Chron of Bracha, was very upset at him. He said, "How can you tell these? We just gave smicha to all these 26-year-old guys, and you're telling all of them that they can't pass an halacha for the next 14 years." He said, "You know, I don't make the psak. I just report it. You know, I don't write the halachos. I just remember it says what it says in Shulchan Aruch." But so does that mean that no one before the age of 40 is ever going to be able to answer a question? There are questions you're already answering, right? Your friend says, your brother says, "I forgot which way do we wrap tefillin again? Do we do this way or that way?" So you answer the shayla, "Yeah, we do that way," or whatever. Meaning that not everything is a psak, not everything is a hurrah. There are certain things that are just basic, you know, basic halachos that that are black on white, and that you're allowed to, certainly you're allowed to paskin. You know, that's true of and there are many levels, again, many levels in between. And what's most important is that you recognize what you know and what you don't know, and you recognize, you know, what's within your jurisdiction and what's not within your jurisdiction. And it helps to recognize when you're young that you are young, and to recognize when you're old that you're not necessarily wise just because you're old. Those are two common mistakes. Sometimes young people feel that they know more than they do, but there's a certain value to having experience, and that's what Chazal tells us. There's a concept of a tzur b'mei rabbanan. Tzur b'mei rabbanan is someone under the age of 40. But nevertheless, the halacha in Shulchan Aruch says not allowed to paskin a serious shayla when there are older people. Also, to get a feel for Psak, you need to see how certain concepts are used. The concept of Shasad Chak, the concept of Das Yachad, the concept of Svek Sveka. Right? What do they say that in Brisk they used to say that whenever the Shaila came up, they would say it's a Svek Sveka, Safik, it's Mot. They say that the Brisker Dayan was a big Mekel, right? That he was always Mekel on all the Shailas. So they would say whenever they had a shayla, it was a svek sveka, safik it's mutter, safik it's asur, and even if it's asur, maybe the brisker dayan has a head. You know, that was the so everything's a svek sveka. So that's not, obviously not really a svek sveka. So you have to appreciate how we use the concept of svek sveka. Not every safik is a 50-50 safik. Some svekos are overwhelming in one direction or another. So with that as a basic introduction, let's go through Simen Yud in Chosh Mishpat. Any questions or comments yet? No? Okay, let's go through Simen Yud and Chosh Mishpat and go through some of the basics. So Simen Yud and Chosh Mishpat is Hilchos Dayanim, and Sif Aleph reads as follows. Tzarech Adayin Lios Masun Bedin. First of all, the Dayan needs to be patient. So you have to make sure that you get clarity. You have to make sure that you worked on it hard enough and long enough that you have clarity in the halacha. V'agos libo bara v'kofei to posek adin kodem sheachrenu heitev beinol v'natzmo. But if a person jumps to give issue a psak before he really knows it, atchilo barlo k'shemesh, till you have great clarity, hareis a shota rasha v'gas ruach. That's a pretty strong lashon. Doesn't mean that he's making a mistake. No, that's not a mistake. That's a shota, it's a rasha, and it's a gas ruach, meaning the person is not taking the whole system seriously enough. Remember, Rav Shachter once commented to me that a few times, more than once, he commented in two different contexts about someone who referred to halachic analysis as a game or as a show. In two different contexts, I'm not going to go through the context because then you may be able to figure out who's what. But in two different contexts, once someone referred to Psak Halacha as a game, the game is up, or the rules of the game, and someone else referred to it as a show. The show is over, folks, or something like that. And he said that person should not be dealing with Halacha, because if you refer to it as a show or as a game, then that's not the proper seriousness with which to take Halacha. Halacha has to be taken very seriously, the way our approach to Psak has to be taken very seriously. And if a person doesn't take it seriously enough to really work to understand the Psak that he's giving, to understand what it's based on, so then it's Shota Rasha V'Gas Ruach. So the Shulchan Aruch is highlighting the importance of patience in Psak, which is not a virtue that is widely admired in our generation. And that's a unique challenge to Rabbanim nowadays, because someone sends you a text and you don't respond right away, so they send a text to four other rabbis, right? You didn't respond, so they write it. So like if you take more than 3 seconds to get back to them, you're already too late. You already missed the boat, and the rabbi is not responsive. And even if you respond, give me time to look into it. It's like, what's the matter with you? You don't know the halacha? Didn't you get tzmicha? Why do you need time to look into it? It's just not something that's looked up to. We need to train the balabatim a little bit more. That probably, if the rabbi says something like that, says, give me time to look into it, it's a maila. It's not a chisaron in the rabbi. A lot of times people are very nervous. Rabbanim are very nervous that they're going to look foolish, that they're going to look like they don't know enough, or they're going to look. I don't find so much that, although people are impatient, I don't find so much that they lose respect. I think the adrabah, they do gain respect when you're honest and you say that I'm willing to put in the time and I'm going to put in the time. But I just can't answer you right now because it's a serious question. A lot of times people, when they ask a shayla, they want to know that it's a serious question. They want to know that it's, and that alone is better than an answer sometimes. Some things don't even need an answer. They just want to know that they asked a good question. Like, it makes them feel good that they asked a good question. Someone asked me recently, I gave a shiur, and I said, this whole shiur is from such and such a sefer. So someone said, and then I just said what the sefer said, because I don't have any chidushim, so that's all my shiurim are from such and such a sefer, sometimes from a few sarim, but whatever, So someone said, why did you do that? The whole audience is going to lose respect for me. You just lifted the whole shiur straight from that sefer. I said, if they lose respect for me, I don't find that that's the case. First of all, I think they forget after the first minute that you even said which sefer it's from. People say, you said that Bereshis Bara Elokim Es HaShemayim was, no, that was from a book. It says that in the Chumash, that Bereshis Bara Elokim wasn't me. But I don't think people lose respect if you're honest and straightforward about what you know and what you don't know. And it is important to look in Svarim. The Post can tell us that Mor Halacha Bifnei Rabbo Bizman Hazeh relates to a tshuva like this in the Shvas Yaakov, and Rav Shachter Kosher Mechaim Velazhner similarly, that even though we may not have a din of Rabbi Mufak anymore Bizman Hazeh, you don't have someone who you learn Rav Tarasa from because we have printed Svarim, so there's so much that's available to us that it could be a violation of Mor Halacha Bifnei Rabbo if you're Mor Halacha without looking in Svarim. So it's important to take a look in Svarim. It's important to do the research. Also, a lot of times when you look in Svarim, just like a new angle, you just start thinking about things in a more clear way. Even if there's nothing in the Sefer that you didn't necessarily know, it's just sometimes osios machkimos, and you just think of things clearly. It's also important to have yishuv hadas when you're paskening. A lot of times people are like that, rabbis are busy, so you're juggling your children or your driving in traffic and a truck cut you off, and like you have different things going on, and that's not a time to get to paskin a serious shayla. The Bach writes in Yerodei and Reish Mem Beis that someone is ain't daitum yirshavus alav al yorah b'shah shu meitzar tichsev b'tzar al yorah, that a person who's meitzar, a person who's in distress, should not pass on halacha. There's a beautiful tshuva in the Yehuda like that in Evne Ezer Simitas Vav, where he says he thinks you could be mekel on the particular shayla, but he writes yan ki roshi v'libi bal imi ki zugasi harabanis himutelis al eres tvai ze yosu mishal shavuos. He says my wife is deathly ill, and therefore I can't focus. I don't have my full capacity to focus. So v'lchein lo yuchal lismuch ke'es alai. You can't rely on me right now. V'yivar hu hadvarim v'yimim seim nechonim yuchal atira. So please, he says, don't trust me. Please just like really analyze whether what I'm saying makes sense to you, whether it's correct, because I can't trust myself at a time like this, which is a stunning admission of the Nedibud. Now we have seen our poskim that are able to paskin in times of great personal distress, because sometimes they don't have a choice, right? There's a whole shalos troops mi mamakim. What was he supposed to do? The leader had to stand up. The whole world is in distress. When we had Corona, when the Corona first hit, and it was at its very worst, the whole world is in distress. We asked Rav Shachter, how do you keep it together? You know, when we were dealing with all those shaylas up on the phone, on the Zoom calls and the phone calls with him late at night, going through, writing those tshuvas that he was that he was doing, like he would cry a lot because he always cries a lot. But then, like when it came time to write the tshuva, when it came time to issue the psak, the crying would stop and he'd get like laser focused and he would go through the psak. And he told us over the part from the Baal Shem Tov, Shivisi Hashem the Negdi Samid, Shivisi Kama. Why is it Shivisi? Why is it that I'm able to maintain an equilibrium? Because Hashem l'negdi samid, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu is in my life, I realize HaKadosh Baruch Hu runs the world. And when you have Hashem l'negdi samid, you should be able to maintain that sense of equilibrium in your life. So sometimes you have no choice but to paskin in time of distress, because everybody's in distress. Or, the post can discuss a case of, the rabbi is sitting shiva, right? So, but Rabban Tzrichim lo. People need him for psak. So even though Novel is also B'talmud Torah, but when you have a case of Rabban Tzrichim lo, so Rabban Tzrichim lo, but he's in distress, he's in Avela, so you have Rashi and Sukkah, right, that says that, so get over it, get over your distress, you shouldn't be in Tsar. But a lot of people are not able to get over the distress, right? Pashtus is that it's a Kim Shebelev of being in Tsar in Avelus anyway. But in general, a person has to know when he has a clear mind and doesn't have a clear mind, right? Meaning if it's something that really requires... It's okay to say I just don't have the clarity right now. I'm very often responding, I'm driving, this needs time, this can't be like off the cuff. Again, 90% of the questions that a rabbi gets are not shaylas per se, meaning 90% of the questions, they're questions, they're mar makom lo, they're like, what's the practice about this? What's the, or it's a shayla you've paskin 1,000 times without any difference, milchik spoon accidentally dipped into, stirred the hot chicken soup, like basic things that you've dealt with 1,000 times. In fact, Rabbi Josh Fluke told me he would like to develop a list of the 100 or 1,000, I don't know what number he's going to choose, most common shaylas that are asked to Rabbanim. We should give it out to like smicha students on their way out. Here's the handbook. this is what you're gonna need. This will cover 95% of the cases, except for the unusual ones.
They just get to the Balabatim.
Right. And, it's like the Pesach list. It's like, although it doesn't seem to have gotten anywhere because they still ask all those questions.
Sure.
Yeah. But he wanted to like survey all the Rabbanim throughout the country.
Yeah.
What are the...
Yeah, it makes sense to do. He's done that already in certain areas. It's Hanukkah like that, maybe 3 weeks. He's done that.
So I thought at least the Shailas that the very same people, meaning that you know you'll be asked every year, that happen every year, meaning at least around Yom Tov. Like every year, a half a dozen people will call me up and will say, right after Sukkot, how do you get rid of a little Vanessa? Okay, you let it throw it in the garbage, you know, let it throw it. Like every, so just like, we can make a list of such Shailas. You left them oil from the Chanukah and things like that. It's not all about Tashmish Mitzvah. There are other things also that people ask every single year. So a person, you know, should know when you have the clarity, when you don't have the clarity. I mean, a lot of this, the art of psak relates to just being honest with yourself and just knowing what you know and what you don't know. The Gemara Sanhedrin on Dav Zayin tells us, "May dechsev din lebokr mishpat v'chibokr dan v'chol yom ein danin." Do we only do din b'bokr and not the rest of the day? Again, the same idea with Shulchan Aruch, saying that if you have great clarity on an issue, then you should pasken on it. Otherwise, you shouldn't. Part of the clarity is in the situation. It's not just in the halacha. To develop a sense of what kinds of shailas, like we said before, can be asked over a text or over a phone call or over need to be in person. Most of the time, I find, I don't know, maybe I'm wrong about this, I find most of the time people have a sense for that. They have a sense for what needs to be a conversation, what doesn't. Every once in a while, not. You know, like every once in a while, you'll have someone, "I must meet with you." And like, okay, you must meet with me. They come and like a Hilchos Borer question on Shabbos. Like, you know, like, probably didn't need a meeting. You know, this one could have been a text. You know, this one could have been, or like a personal text. "Hey, can I get an abortion?" You know, or like, you know, like something that, like, no, this probably needs to be a conversation, right? Meaning there are probably circumstances that I need to know about this before we. But most of the time, I think people have a sense of what needs to. But the Rav should also have a sense of that. You know, sometimes people, you know, that you need to hear way more of the story than whatever was just told to you right now. That you know, someone's asking something that clearly is missing so many details. A lot of times a person doesn't even know which part of the situation is a shaila, right? Meaning like someone, a rabbi calls up and says, what did I have just recently? Rabbi called up and said, "Could we be Megayer or lesbian?" There's a story here, right? I mean, there's more to this, right? You have to like get to the whole situation, what the whole story is. Like, what are you really asking, and why are you asking this, and what's the pressure to do this, and is this a kiruv situation? Is it a gir l'chumra, someone who's already might be Jewish? Is this a real gerus? You have to really get to the core of the issue. Okay, I'm not going to deal with that shayla right now, but let's move on from that. The use of of kitzur books is very valuable in psak halacha, but it is not the source of psak halacha. I remember we once asked in one of our trips to Eretz Yisrael, were you with us when we were with Rav Asher Weiss, when we asked him about kitzur books? Isaac asked him. Right? Yeah. No, Isaac asked him, Rabbi Isaac Rice asked Rav Asher, we were in a room full of Svarim, and Rabbi Rice said to Rav Asher, "What was the last sefer you bought with your own money?" Which was like such a funny question to ask.
Right?
What?
He liked the kids' books, no? He thought they were...
Oh, so he went into a whole thing about Svarim Bizmanenu. It was a great question to ask, because, okay, the answer was, I think, Halicho Shlomo or something, but, Mincha Shlomo, he said, Halicho Shlomo the grandchildren gave to him. But Mincha Shlomo, I think, was the last one he bought with his own money. But he launched into a whole discussion of contemporary Svarim, and he said, these books that have, like, every Maramakom you could ever want on a particular topic, they can't be the basis of a psak halacha, but they're extremely valuable to a posik. He said, "I'm not embarrassed to admit that I use them." He said, "If I'm writing a tshuva, I want to know if there's a maramakum that I missed, if there's something that I should know about." And these people, some guy in the mirror, just spent 4 years learning about, Netilas Yadayim on Tuesdays. Yeah, so he knows more about Netilas Yadayim on Tuesdays than I do. Would I trust him on Psak Halacha about Netilas Yadayim on Tuesday? Probably not, because he probably has an oversized version in his head of how important Netilas Yadayim on Tuesday is.
Ari Wasserman's got this 2-volume on.
I always give that as the example, even though I'm a good friend of Rabbi Ari Wasserman. He has the 2 big fat volumes on wearing a yarmulke.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Big volumes.
Right. So meaning someone who spent that much time, let's say, learning about yarmulkes, may think yarmulkes are more important than, you know, he's likely to fall into the trap, not saying that Rabbi Wasserman does, but he's likely to fall into the trap to think that yarmulkes are more important than they actually are. Yarmulkes become Yarek Val Yavar, because why else would I have spent 10 years of my life studying and getting my PhD on yarmulkes? So it must be that, you know, so it's important that a posek has access to all these things, because they're very, very helpful. But at the same time, they don't substitute for knowing the sugya. A person has to know the sugya. You know, the rush in the tshuva and Klal Amralef writes that a person is not allowed to pass straight from the Rambam. This is before the Shulchan Aruch was written. He said, you can't pass it. Now the Rambam says, you are allowed to pass straight from the Rambam, right? The Rambam says, that's why I wrote the book. But the Rush says, you're not allowed to. He says, if you don't know the sugi where the Ram got it from, you're going to end up asking that which is mutter, mattering that which is aser. So typically, when you're learning a sugi la halacha, it's really important to learn the Gemaras, to know all the Gemaras, and the right way to do it is to go through the Rishonim and the Beis Yosef, and it's very time consuming. And then the Shulchan Aruch and Nosei Kelim. It was interesting last year when we met with. Some of us here met with Rabbi Yisrael Reisman. He said that by Rav Pam, he told him not to go through the Beis Yosef. That he should, if you learn the Nosei Kelim on the Shulchan Aruch, and you're familiar with the sugya, they'll quote all the important Rishonim, so you'll have a basic idea of that. And as long as you know the Rishonim that they're referring to, you'll have the basic idea. You don't need the Beis Yosef. So he has like such a Masorah and Psak, and you hear it based on the idea that. The Beis Yosef was written before the Nosei Kelim were written, so the Shulchan Aruch became an independent book, even though it wasn't written to be an independent book, and then the Nosei Kelim justified it as an independent book by adding in all of the commentary. But I think in our yeshiva, I think that's generally not the accepted practice. I think we generally do think that you need to go through the Beis Yosef.
What do you mean the Shulchan Aruch was not supposed to be an independent book? What do you mean?
He wrote in the introduction to the Shulchan Aruch that it's you have to learn the Beis Yosef
but not
first.
Independent of learning.
Not independent of the Beis Yosef, meaning it's a Cliff's Notes to be chazir every 30 days. You should just chazir every month. You should chazir all of Shulchan Aruch, and it's probably not that long. It's probably not bigger than the Shulchan Aruch is so big because of all the Nosei Kelim. So our heter is that we have all the Nosei Kelim, and that's what I think Rav Pam told. But I think in our yeshiva we generally do assume that it's kedai to go through the Beis Yosef, probably because we're not really all that familiar with all the Rishonim that the Nosei Kelim are quoting. So you need to see how the Beis Yosef develops the idea. There's a tshuva in the Ksav Sofer, where the Ksav Sofer and Rav Chaim Simin Yuches says that that's the basis of the idea of Dalil Amos al Halacha. They could have picked any number of Amos. Why is it Dalil Amos of Halacha? So he says, because you need for Kol Madregel and Madregel Lilmot Tchila Mikra, V'achar Kach Mishnah, V'achar Kach Gemara, V'achar Kach Halacha. That Dalil Amos al Halacha means that Halacha is the end stage in a four-step process. At first you need to know Mikra, then you need to know Mishnah, then you need to know Gemara, then you can learn Halacha. But you can't view Halacha as being independent. I think that not only is the fact that Halacha is often packaged in a way where it's just like the end game, it's just like, here's the Halacha, not only does that hurt our perception of Psak. I was talking to, maybe on Yantip or something, I was having a meal with my sister and her family, with our family, my sister's family, and one of my nieces was asking me like how halacha works, and she was like, I don't get it, like someone asks you a question, like how do you know the answer? Do you just like flip a coin, you know, to like yes or no, like where does it come from? Like she just assumed like it's just something the rabbi is like, well, I feel, you know, like it's totally made up on the spot. Like it's so I think most people don't have maybe that degree of a disconnect, but when you just see everything as bottom line and you have no sense of where it comes from, it seems shallow. This is a problem. A lot of people struggle with their relationship to halacha. They don't, because they don't see it as something that makes sense. Meaning there are all these details, and you know, and the question that starts with the words, does God really care if, you know, like and it seems like he shouldn't, because where does this even come from? And the more you learn the halachic system and you see where things actually do come from, the more it makes sense to you. It also provides a person, I think we need to Lanias Daiti, I know, and this is where I run the risk of saying different than Moreinu Rav Shachter Shlita in terms of what Balabatim should be learning in terms of halacha. So Shachter often says Kitzur Shulchan Aruch. That's what used to be the practice. Kitzur Shulchan Aruch. I think in our generation, if you just learn Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, you run into that trouble of like, well, yeah, where does this all come from? So Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, you learn about the right shoe and the left shoe, and that like, what, you know. Although not that you can have any better explanation when you in that particular sugya, but like, you know, it's just it feels disconnected from things. I think intelligent people who have, you know, studied in yeshiva and have college educations and graduate degrees and things like, they need to feel more of a sense of a system. And if you don't give them that sense of a system of where things come from, I think it starts to ring hollow and they don't connect to it as much. So then Rav Shachter is assuming everyone's a tzaddik like him, so you know he assumes that everyone will automatically accept whatever it says in Kitzur Shulchan Aruch. But a lot of people would be like, who's this Gans Fried guy anyway, and why do I have to listen to him, right? Meaning, I'm not saying like bad people, I'm not saying even people who, even from people who grew up, they just won't have that appreciation. I think we need to give that sense of like where halacha comes from as much as we can.
Just curious if you think that that's true every single time you're giving over a halacha, or let's say like if after Shacharis, I'm the rabbi of the shul, I give over a 2-minute bar halacha. So to give over a Kitzur Shulchan Aruch then, but I have a lot of other opportunities where I show them.
Yeah, so there is room for Kitzur Shulchan Aruch in Judaism, right? Meaning that I'm not trying to write the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch out of Judaism, right? There is room for that, and there's room for. I just think that the goal in teaching halacha, meaning that shouldn't be the halacha shirin shul, right? Meaning the only halacha shirin. The goal in teaching halacha should be, and then the psak becomes, it matters more, and you're going to get more shailas. Meaning the more you talk about how halacha relates to every day, first of all, people see more meaning in the halacha, they'll also see more meaning in their lives. We're getting a little away from the art of psak over here a little bit, but I think that take a case of that Rabbanim deal with all the time. Someone dies, right? People are thrown into immediate chaos when, you know, emotional turmoil when they lose a relative. If you look at the difference between the way, and you'll see this over your careers and your lives and just your connections with people, there are people who are halachically observant and people who are not halachically observant. The way that they process things, at least in my experience, is completely different. Halacha gives a person direction. Like the fact that there is something that you're supposed to do and there are things that you're not supposed to do, they want to know, like right away, what am I supposed to do? What am I not supposed to do? And just that gives a certain clarity and a certain direction, like, okay, you know, God put me here on a mission on this earth and there are expectations and this is, it makes my life. You know, when someone doesn't have that, they don't know what to do next, and they're in chaos, and there's no path through the darkness. They get lost in that darkness. Even not such an extreme case. You know, people often think of observance of the minutia of halacha as being something that causes anxiety, causes stress. Now, it could be if you have an unhealthy relationship with halacha. It could be if you have other emotional issues or mental health issues that, you know, are exacerbated by your relationship with halacha. But really, it should relieve all the stress. Meaning, a lot of anxiety comes from just not knowing what to do, and not knowing what we're supposed to do, and not knowing, you know, what's next. Halacha really governs everything from the moment we wake up in the morning to the moment we go to sleep at night. It just gives a person direction, gives you a sense of what you're supposed to do at every moment. And that really relieves a lot of stress, makes life much easier to live. It just gives you a sense of like, oh, okay, so like, I know where I'm supposed to be. I know what I'm supposed to be doing. And you know, I think to teach that healthy sense of direction in life that the Ribbono Shel Olam gave us an instruction manual, I think that's emotionally a very healthy thing for a person. So it's a little bit beyond the art of psak, but I think, you know, a lot of Rabbanim don't know how halacha works because that was never their thing. They were lamdanim, or they were interested in, you know, in other areas of Hashem's Torah. They were interested in philosophy or whatever else, which are great and it's wonderful. But like, if we're going to teach people observance, we need to teach the method, the methodology of why we observe and how it developed and how we think about these issues. You know, people think that I'm getting on my soapbox a little bit over here, but people think that the only way to connect to the Ribono Shel Olam is by talking directly about, you know, what is God and what does He look like and that, what are our interactions with Him, and like that's. I think that there are people that connect that way, but I think a lot of people connect through understanding what God wants of us. And appreciating the beauty of Torah and how Torah develops and how Torah works, and I think a lot of the people that can't imagine someone connecting to Hashem in that way probably never learned it properly. I mean, they probably never saw it. They probably never saw it in the right way. If they can't imagine, they can't be masig such a thing. I was talking to a good friend of mine who's a Rav in a very, very large shul. And he said that he was giving a halacha shir, and there was someone who was known as a Kabbalistic type of fellow, and the person just like put his head down in the middle of the shir, and he came over to me after. He said, "I'm sorry, this is just mind numbing for me. I can't deal with this stuff. I just can only learn like Kabbalah," and like, you know, it's probably a person who's never exposed to the beauty of the development of Torah and the way that it's supposed to be learned. So again, we have to be familiar with it first, and then we should express it all the time. I've often said that, you know, all those years teaching in DRS, I would start with every, you remember, right? We saw Shiloh of the day every day. We'd start remember? Yeah, did it with your time also. Yeah. Were you the same class? You were the same year. Okay, I always get confused. Yeah. Who was when? Yeah. So
that year we happened to be in the basement. Okay.
Right, I remember that. So sometimes I'll ask a guy, "Remember so and so, is he in your class?" He's like, "He's my father." like he's like, I'm off by like 15 years or something. So what was I saying? Oh yeah, so the Shaila of the day. You ask a Shaila and just like show how we and all of a sudden Talmidim start thinking about like everything in terms of halacha. So anyway, okay, let's go back to the Shulchan Aruch over here. So the Shulchan Aruch writes in Siv Beis, "Kol mi shabal yado din mitamei l'din acher shabal yado kvar upasko v'yeshimo bi'ir gadol men b'chachma ve'enu nimlach bo hareze b'chal harashom shelibam gaspa hora." That someone who has a case that comes to him, and he said, "Oh, this is similar to another case that happened, similar enough shaila to another shaila that happened, and there is a gadol menu b'chachma to consult with, and he chooses not to consult with him. So then he's b'chal harishayim shelibam gaspara. That's arrogance. Meaning a person has to consult with others in paskening halacha, and this is also an extremely valuable thing." And for a lot of Rabbanim that are out of town, that are in smaller communities, it's very important to be proactive about it, because you don't necessarily naturally have who to consult with. Meaning when you're in a large community and there are other Rabbanim and there are other Talmid Chachamim around all the time, so you'll always be at a simcha, you'll go to a wedding and you find yourself sitting at a table with Rav Shechter and Rav Willig. Okay, what should I talk about? You know, what are the questions that people ask me? So those, they happen on their own. But when you're all alone out there, and you need to make those connections, you need to work very hard on maintaining those connections, so that you could always be talking, talking over the issues that come up. To always consult with other people, and it means contemporaries also. I think is very, very important to consult with. The Gemara in Sanhedrin Daf Zayin says that when Rav Huna had a din Torah, he would gather 10 rabbanim to share the burden of responsibility. And it's quoted Allah in Choshen Mishpat and Siman Gimel that to not take everything on his own, And a lot of times you don't even notice your own biases in a psak. The way someone asks a shaila might be a bias, right? Someone might say, "I'm pretty sure this is mutter, but just wanted to double check," right? So they've already biased you, right? Well, if they're sure it's mutter, then I should probably be sure that it's mutter. the old rabbi was always making on this, but I just wanted to make sure that, you know, that I got it right. Meaning, like, that those kinds of comments, you know, the way people You know, we'll say it, so that can bias you. So it's important to consult with other people, that a person shouldn't be biased. The Gemara in Erevin tells us that we pass on like Beis Hillel because they taught Divrei Beis Shammai before they were makdim Divrei Beis Shammai l'divreihem. They taught Divrei Beis Shammai before their own shita, and l'chora that's not just an inyan in having nice midos. L'chora that's an inyan in arriving at the truth. You know, it is a certain spiritual element to that. The Beis Yosef in Klalei Talmud writes that Torah is a spiritual pursuit and it requires siyata d'shmaya, and therefore it could be that's what's behind the Beis Hillel. You know, Domar Rav L'malach Hashem Tevakish Torah Mipiv Imlav Ali Vakish Torah Mipiv, we did recently in Daf Yomi, that there is a certain maila to midos of a Talmud Chacham, and if the tzaddik doesn't have the Talmud Chacham doesn't have great midos, you probably don't want to go to such a person for guidance in anything, let alone Psak Halacha. Although a lot of times people make the mistake of thinking that they have to go to the biggest people for every psak. And that's also not true. A lot of times the biggest people don't have the time to give you to really work through it, because they're dealing with everything. They're dealing with everybody. So, you know, I think Rabbi Breidowitz from Ar Sameach always says that if everyone were to decide, well, I need a Rebbe Mufak, so I'm going to go straight to the top. So Chaim Kanievsky is going to be my Rebbe Mufak, but he won't even give you more than two words at a time. So is that really the best Rebbe for you? You know, like maybe that's it's not a chisaron in him, you know, but it's a chisaron in the kind of relationship that you could ever possibly develop with him, that you could ever possibly get from him. So it's, you know, that's something that a person should keep in mind also. But this idea of consulting with other people, I think that's what the Achronim say on Chumash, that's why Yaakov got so upset at Shimon and Levi. That Shimon and Levi had a good taina, right? But they said Argazoni Yasas Achoseinu when Yaakov confronted them originally. So it's a good taina. We love our sister Argazoni Yasas Achoseinu. But the real taina may have been, yeah, but I'm here. Meaning you had a Yaakov Avinu, and you went in and you did something like that, like something of that magnitude, without consulting with the Yaakov Avinu, that's something that should never happen. You have to consult Misha Gadol B'Menu if you have access to someone who's Gadol B'Menu. That's an important element of Psak Halacha. Also, a person has to be balanced in terms of not looking for a Kula or looking for a Chumra. You're looking for MS in general. You know, the Gemara says Nerevin Davav Mikuli Beishami Mikuli Beisilo is a Rasha because you end up with inconsistencies. That's what makes you a Rasha. It's not because that, you know, either one has a monopoly on the MS. It's just that, you know, a lot of times there are inconsistencies in the Pesach. The Gemara says there are exceptions. So the Gemara says about David HaMelech in Maseches Brachos that Yadam Milchleches B'dam Shvira B'dam Shilia Kedei L'Tahirisha L'Baila, in order to be Metahirisha L'Baila. So you see that when it comes to Chuznida, there is a little bit of a netiya to try to find a kula, to try to find a way to be mitari yishul baila. I know a lot of times, because I live in a large community with many rabbanim, if someone comes to me with a day 6 bedika and it doesn't look good, I'm never going to be machmir. I'll just say, I can't be makel, but I suggest you ask so-and-so, or ask someone else. Meaning, I'm not interested in being mitami yishul baila. Sometimes I am the somebody else. You know, and then we have to say, okay, look, you know, there's nothing we can do over here. You know, there's no, but you know, with another shaila, I may not say, you know, if it was about a trafed up fork, I'm not going to say, I can't be makel, but maybe so and so can be makel. There's no point in doing that. Then you look at it right down the middle, and you say, okay, so this is trafed, so you got to kasher the fork. No. You know, that's how you deal with the. But dafka bei hilchos nida to keep a woman away from her husband. Heter agunos is another example. Not that we deal with that every single day. You also shouldn't go looking for chumras, right? That's
Shalom bayis.
I would put it under the category of like shasad chak. You know, like that's sometimes a major shasad chak, and that comes up a lot, right? Meaning that's why it's important that, as the Rav of a community, if you're the Rav of a community, some of the people ask, that's also, I'm getting a little bit of a soapbox issue over here. there are all these wonderful hotlines that are manned by Talmidei Chachamim and whatever, you know, that you could call and ask a shayla. I think it's a big avla that for people to use that on a regular basis. Okay, if, you know, your fleshic fork, milk, whatever, something like that, and you don't have access to a rabbi, you know, you live in Timbuktu and you don't have access to a rabbi, you don't know. Okay, so there is utility to those things. But you have no idea how many times just knowing who the people are and what they're going through and what their shalom bayis issues are. I just had a Hilchos Nida Shaila recently where a woman did a bedika day one and she forgot to, the Shaila came through. My wife did a bedika day one, she forgot to do day seven bedika until a few minutes after Shkia. Or whatever, several minutes after Shkia. Way too many minutes after Shkia. Can she go to the mikveh tonight? So, what's your first question when someone asks that? She did a day one bedika, she just forgot to do the day seven until whatever it was, 5 o'clock. What?
Did she do the other ones?
Right, so the first question is, what happened to days 2 through 6? Right, meaning, because there were Kala teachers for years that were going around teaching Kalas that, yeah, day one and seven is good enough. It's true, b'diavad, it's good enough. But no one holds it l'chavchila, you're supposed to do a day one and seven, and it's such stupid advice to tell people. They thought they were making the Kala's lives easier by telling them do day one and seven. They're making their lives so much harder, because normally, if you forget one, okay, nishkefer l'ch, you forget one. If you forget one and you're only doing day one and seven, you're really messing them up, right? So it's a very, very terrible thing that Kala teachers used to teach that. So I thought maybe this was an old style Kala teacher she had. So the first question is, does she normally do, was she told not to do 2 and 6? Does she normally do only 1 and 7? So the response was, no, she tries to do every single day, but she's a total space cadet. That was the response. And so, okay, so, no, what do you say? I mean, I happen to know the person, so I know that there's more issues there than just the space cadet. Meaning, it was more than just that she's a space cadet. There are issues in the marriage. There are issues in the dafka around religion in the marriage. If you don't know the whole story, and you're just asked, okay, a woman did a bedika day one, and you'd be like, what's your problem? Do the things the way you're supposed to, and I'm not going to be mekel. You're not going to push me to be mekel because you did something totally wrong. But that's not the right attitude. First of all, it's never the right attitude, but also it's not the right attitude when you're dealing with a situation where this is obviously going to be a major shalom bayis issue. Meaning it's something that's about to explode. So okay, the Shulchan Aruch says ein lahakel, on only day one without day seven. But this was a day seven one was within somebody's Bein HaShemashos, right? It was within some version of Bein HaShemashos, and in the Hakel, but sometimes you have to be Mekel, because there are Rishonim that hold day one without a day seven, meaning there could be, like when there's a serious Shasat Chak situation and you have enough Snifim to put together. Again, I'm not suggesting that right out of Smicha, like you jump to Paskin these Shailas. That's why you have Rabbi Willig and you have Rabbi Sablowski and you have Rabbi Shecht and you have people to consult with. But Shalom Bayis issues very, very often will play an important role. That's just one that comes to mind because that came up recently. But they very often play an important role. That's not a category of halacha. That's a Shas Hadchak that can become a very serious Shas Hadchak depending how serious the Shalom Bayis issues are. Or like someone asked me a shayla once about a Hilchos Nida shayla. I don't know why I always give examples of Hilchos Nida. I guess that's where the Shalom Bayis, I guess, comes most. So someone asked me a Hilchos Nida shayla, and he said, it's day seven bedika. He said, but no pressure to be mekel. That's a funny thing to say. I said, why no pressure to be mekel? He said, we're not going to have tashmish probably anyway. So I said, why? Meaning it's a mitzvazona and a lel tefila. So he said, well, we have Tashmish every 3 months or so. So, you know, that like opened up, like obviously, it's a way to just open up a conversation like, okay, this is a marriage that's in crisis, obviously. This is a marriage that needs to go to a therapist. And he said, I thought it was weird, right? But because people don't talk to other people about this, because you told in class this isn't water cooler conversation, which it isn't, you know, right? You don't talk about these things. So, he didn't know that it was... I make a point to tell Chassadim, the normal frequency of Tashmish, and so that you could know that if it's once every 3 months, yes, that is unusual, and if it's three times a day, that's also unusual, right? Meaning that's also, you probably have a problem in either one of those cases. But again, to know people and to appreciate the whole situation is very, very important. To be like a... that's why, again, like I was saying with these hotlines and whatever, you don't know the family. I just told a story when I was in Chicago. I think I told the story when I was in Chicago that at the beginning of Corona, we lost a friend of ours, Davin Meshul, and I went to high school with him through all the years. A very good, a really good guy, and he died of Corona at the beginning. And so there were a lot of late nights talking to his son at the time, his 18-year-old son, who was a senior in high school. You know, a lot that he was processing in a very, very, very mature way, an unbelievably inspiring way, actually. And he kept on, I was never his Rebbe in school, even though he went to DRS, I was never his Rebbe. He kept on calling me Rebbe, Rebbe, Rebbe. And then at some point he said, Rebbe, you know why I call you Rebbe? And I said, no, actually. I don't know why, normally you call the shul rabbi, rabbi. He said, because my dad used to call you Rebbe. And if my dad called you Rebbe, that meant you were his Rebbe, and if you're his Rebbe, you're my Rebbe. And to have that, hashkafa of, you're the Rebbe of that family. And that's, your job as the rabbi, to be the Rebbe of the family. It's one of the most touching things to me is about 10 years ago, my Balabatim started, the Chevra and Meshul stopped calling me Rabbi and they started calling me Rebbe. Which I thought it was a Rav Moshe Weinberger spillover, as in Chassidus Rebbe. But they know better, right? So I don't think that's what it was. I think it was just, I think that's your job and that's a really great thing it doesn't have to be that that's how they call you, but that there should be that sense. And you work toward that, toward trying to become the Rebbe of that family, where that's, that's the person that they go to talk about things and in areas of halacha and in areas outside of halacha. When I was in Chicago, I was staying at Rabbi Meir Simcha Stromer, so he told me someone called him. My flight got canceled on Motzei Shabbos. So he said that someone called him and asked if they could have Yechidus with me on Motzei Shabbos. I said, not if you call it that. You can't have it. So where were we? So, okay, so Sif Beis was that, what were we saying? That you should consult with other people. I don't know how we got from there to there, but that you should consult with other people before you give up. Ooh, it's late. Sif Gimel. Kirab Mechalalami. What time is this supposed to end?
Officially 1:15. Is there a turnaround today?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. We will end 1:15. I have to give share 1:20. So Sif Gimel. Do people normally go all the way to 1:15, or do they stop early?
Yeah.
They go to 1:15. Okay. So I'm not like.
No.
Okay.
I don't think anybody wants this to end anyway.
So Sif Gimel. Kirab Mechalalami. Pila Zetam Chacham Shloi Gila Ra Mora. Rav Shapter often quotes the Gemara Chagiga that the two tragedies, there are three tears that Rosh Baruch Hu sheds every day, and one of them is for people who are not Higiel Ra and decide to paskin, others that are Higiel Ra and don't paskin. That's an achrayus that a person has, meaning the Gemara, is it a Gemara or a Medrash? Rabbi Shimon Ben Yochai said that that he's upset that he never became a dayan. He's grateful that he didn't become a dayan. So I think the Bar Yosef explains. Oh, Bar Yosef in this past week's parasha. Bar Yosef explains that what he's grateful that he never became a dayan is because in order to be a dayan or a posek, a person needs to have a foot be entrenched in the Beis Medrash in the Dalai Lama Shalalacha. But he also needs to be in touch with reality. He needs to be able to understand what goes on in the real world. And Rav Shmuel Rei Chai, one thing we know about him was that he was Kadosh V'Tahar. He's a perfect candidate to have written the ideas of the Zohar, right? Meaning the, but maybe not the perfect candidate to be a Dayan, you know, who's Yodea Ladan Din Emes La'amita, right? Tyson Sanhedrin, Bab Basra says, what's Din Emes La'amita? That Emes is that you can see if someone's tricking you, if someone's lying, if they're doing something underhanded, and Lamito is that you know the halacha, you know what what's what, and both of those things are absolutely critical in paskening. So it's a responsibility that a person has if a person is qualified, and it's a responsibility a person has to not do it if a person is not qualified. But qualified means that you're qualified to understand people and to know what the case is. Sometimes we'll ask Rav Shechter something, and he'll tell us, go to so-and-so, who's a much younger rabbi who doesn't know half of what Rav Shechter knows, doesn't know a quarter of what Rav Shechter knows. Why does he go? Because that person deals with these kinds of things, so he knows like what the shmua on the street is, and what people are up to, and you know, he's just, Rav Shechter feels that he's not attuned to it. It was one particular Beis Din I asked Rav Shechter about. There are a lot of batei din that people shouldn't go anywhere near. But there was a particular Beis Din that I asked Rav Shechter about, you know, should I, Baal HaBas asked, should he go to this Beis Din or not? So he said, no. I said, but I heard the guy who's Beis Din, is the Av Beis Din, is a big tzaddik and a Talmud Chacham. He said, yeah, he's a very big tzaddik and a very big Talmud Chacham. He has his head in the books all day, and he has no idea. People are pulling the wool over his eyes left and right. He doesn't see anything that says, he only sees what's written in the books. He only sees what's written in the Shulchan Aruch, and that's a real problem also. So a person, when we talk about someone who has the responsibility to paskin, it's higielo ra'a in terms of age and chachma, and all of those things, but also in terms of know-how and in terms of ability to relate to people. The Rambam, when he defines what's not higiel ora, it describes talmidim akatanim shel hirbu Torah karoi, ve'mevakshim lisgadol b'fnei amei ha'aretz. People are very concerned about reputation. It's such a fascinating thing, because this is like an hour dor machala. That a person feels that, like, if I don't publish, then no one's going to respect me, or if I don't get my name out there. That's a term you hear a lot. To get your name out there, to, you know, that's not really our way. You know, people, a lot of times, guys coming out of smicha feel like they know the big names in Rabbanus, you know, so someone will be like, you know, I need to be impactful. I need to be Rav Moshe Weinberger or Rav Ephraim Goldberg tomorrow. Right, and if I'm not them tomorrow, I'll tell you, you don't need to be them ever, because they're only, those are two people that are making major impact in the world, or whoever, you know, whoever it is that's making major impact. And there are a lot of really, really great rabbanim that are doing things very quietly. There's a Chabad shliach in whatever in Nowheresville that's finding yiddin and making an impact and doing things. So it's not about being miskadel. That should never be the that's also, a lot of times you're in a community and you feel like you're such a Talmud Chacham because of who you're comparing yourself to. Meaning you're the only one that knows how to read Rashi script in the whole shul. So like you start to believe that you're the Gadol Adar. But you have to remember like what your Rebbeim look like. You have to remember, remember what a Talmud Chacham looks like. Someone, one of the guys in Kol Elyon, was telling me that he had to go over his chabura with Rav Rosenzweig before giving the chabura. So it was, the chabura was like on a diuk in a Rashbam or something, and he's like, it was just unbelievable because I didn't tell him in advance what I was going to be talking about, and like I just mentioned the Rashbam, and he knew like every Rishon and every slight change in formulation in the Rishonim on that, like to have all of Shas lumdicized in your head already, and like to pull it up like that, it's like, it's wild. But like you could forget that, and like you don't think now that you can forget that, but you can, because you'll go somewhere and you like you prepare a beautiful Mar Makomos sheet, you know, with like 50 Makoros. Like I must be really, really chashuv if I was able to prepare 50 Makoros. You know, you could lose a sense of yourself. So it's very important that a person. keeps that sense of what gadlus is, and not to be niskadel b'fnei amei haaretz. Even if the amei haaretz have a lot of kavod haTorah and they tell you how you know how great you are, not to always believe them. Reb Chaim used to say that no svar could be said until you learn all of Shas with Rashi. Right? They say that Reb Chaim would spend like a half hour every day, or an hour every day, I don't know, going over Masechta Baal Peh, a whole Masechta Baal Peh. That you know, people often talk about Reb Chaim Zee and they forget about his bikiyas. I mean, to have this vast knowledge is important. We'll 1:15. Okay. It's important to have a Masorah. It's important to respect precedent in Pesach. If something was never done before, there's very likely a reason why it was never done before, and you should always ask yourself a million times. I always comment about the Tcheles discussion, that it is healthy that there's so much pushback against the Tcheles, meaning that's a healthy, you know, misguided as it may be, it's a healthy instinct to say, well, listen, we never did this before. Like, you better prove this is right, you know, if we never did this before. That's a healthy instinct for us to have. And a lot of times people get, they say, well, I don't see anything halachically wrong with a woman putting on tefillin, you know, or something like that. There is plenty halachically wrong, but let's say a person were to say, like, I don't see anything halachically wrong. Yeah, but has anyone ever done it? And if they haven't, like, take a step back and ask yourself, like, why? You know, so precedent is very, very important. Pesach, having a Masorah is very important. Pesach, having a Rebbeim is very important. Pesach, many, many other issues that we didn't get to. But I apologize, this wasn't as interactive as I thought it would be. I'm not good at, like, pulling out the interaction. I don't know. I got to get better at that.
Like, listening.
Very good. I apologize. Thank you very much. It really was.